Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Beth Bielow, and you're listening to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today. Sometimes in business, as in life, we get stuck. We find ourselves spinning our wheels or just not making the progress we want. Usually, the first place we look to make a change, at least in our businesses, is with our marketing strategy. My guest today, Julie Fleming, works with small business owners who love what they do but don't love marketing. Julie helps them learn how to attract their ideal clients by doing what they do best, serving clients. The result is that they get all the business they need, make more money, and love their thriving businesses. Julie is the author of The Reluctant Rainmaker, a guide for lawyers who hate selling, and the upcoming book Ignite It, Explode the Profit in Your Service-Based Business, due to be published in January 2011. Julie speaks nationally on business development, creating exceptional client service, time mastery, and work-life integration. Before launching her business in 2006, Julie practiced law for nearly 15 years, specializing in patent litigation and practicing with firms ranging from 1 to over 2,100 lawyers.
Julie, welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited that you're here today.
Thank you, Beth. I have so been looking forward to this conversation.
Well, you know, you and I met back in May at a, at a workshop, and it was a real turning point for me because that was the workshop where I discovered Introvert Entrepreneur. So it's very exciting. So I've been, I'm really glad that we're making time for this conversation. And one of the things I didn't learn about you that I'm very curious about is how did you make the transition from practicing law to being a coach and a consultant?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because unlike most lawyers who leave practice, I actually loved practicing law. But what happened is I did a patent litigation practice, and that is a very time-consuming and geographic-intensive sort of practice. And I came to a time when, for personal reasons, I needed to have more geographic flexibility. So I started thinking about other things that I could do, and of course, I hired a coach. I've always been a big believer in coaching, even before I was one. But through working with her, I looked at my interests, my strengths, my skills, and I realized that I had always coached informally, always mentored younger lawyers, even mentored older lawyers in some instances. And so I was intrigued by the idea of coaching, and there was this moment when a light bulb went on, and I thought, ah, wait, I want to do what you do. So my coach told me about the Georgetown Leadership Coach Training Program. I enrolled, it seemed like 5 minutes later, it was actually a little bit longer than that, and just loved it, absolutely loved it. And all of that was back in 2006, 2007. So I added the speaking and writing books along the way, but it as soon as I discovered coaching and discovered consulting as a possibility for me, I never looked back. It's just been fabulous.
I love your story parallels mine in some ways. In terms of I loved what I was doing before, and then in my case, a geographic change caused a shift in looking at what was possible. And like you, I learned about the coaching, saw a training program, and it seemed like literally 5 minutes later, there I was, and haven't looked back.
Yes.
So I appreciate your story. And I know, you know, since then, again, something I didn't know about you then, but I now know is that you are a fellow introvert. And I'm wondering how your introvert side has supported you in your journey as you've made that transition and have become a full-fledged entrepreneur. How does it support you?
It's interesting to me. I think the biggest thing that it has done for me, and I've only concluded this in conversation with people who are extroverts, is that I am very happy. A lot of the work that I do is in writing, is in reading things and getting ideas from other people and then bringing it into my world or my client's world. And I'm very happy in my office. I talk with, like I said, some of my colleagues who are extroverts who say, I can't believe it. I have been in my office for 3 days. I'm like, uh-huh.
And Exactly. Yeah. Is there something wrong with that?
Exactly. They say, you know, I'm just so jittery and so unproductive. And I'm like, really? I'm very productive when I'm at home and in my home office. I'm 16 minutes down the hallway. That's my commute every day. I feel like I have a real level of focus and a real level of turning inward that allows me to then bring things outward. But I don't have that jittery, got to get out of here feeling. So it certainly supported me that way. And I think also it supported me in that when I make connections with people, they tend to be pretty substantial connections. I tend to go for depth with people rather than breadth. You know, I'm not a big person for going out every single day to a different kind of group and doing tons and tons of networking in a big group setting. I would much rather meet some people in that kind of setting and then start talking with them one-on-one and build real relationships through shared interests and common goals and things like that that really move the conversation forward rather than having 50,000 contacts, none of whom really know me. So I think it's supported me in that way as well.
In what ways does it present a challenge to you, if any at all?
Well, I guess the challenge is the flip side of my second point there in terms of the networking. I do believe that person-to-person connections are one of the best ways to grow a business. And, again, I do a lot of one-on-one connecting. It does, I think that it's helpful when I can sort of get out of my own groove and go somewhere that is outside my comfort zone and start to meet a lot of new people because it gets that pipeline going again for the one-on-one. But it's sometimes a challenge for me to do that.
What have you found it to be the most effective stretching of your comfort zone outlets?
In terms of?
Like the kind of group, you know, is it a being part of the Rotary or being, you know, what kinds of networking situations are a stretch that you've found to be worth stretch?
Almost all of them, honestly, except for the speed networking. I've done a couple of those things, and that's just a little too stretchy. I am not at my best in 90-second increments.
Right. Most of us aren't, at least not the introverts.
Exactly. But really, when I identify a group that has the right kind of people, and by that I mean the kinds of people who are going to have some shared interests, it is much more common than not that when I do get myself out of the house and go to those groups and start making connections, I'm glad that I went. So it's really getting myself going.
Yeah, I think of it as like going to the gym. It's
exactly.
Getting myself out of the house. Once I get there, I'm happy. I'm glad I went.
Yeah.
It's that initial getting the body out the door. That is
exactly.
the biggest thing, yeah.
Yeah, and all about perception, all about is this something that I'm really going to enjoy or do I actually need to be sitting here and dreading every moment of it?
We have a choice, don't we?
Absolutely,
we have a
in
choice.
Every single moment. Yeah.
Well, you work with some groups that I have something of an assumption that probably contains a lot of introverts, because I understand that the law profession attracts a lot of introverts.
Yeah.
And so in your work with them and in other groups, you know, what do you notice as the biggest obstacles in them growing their practice or growing their business?
I think the biggest obstacle that I've noticed is what sometimes seems like the bad rep of being an introvert. Because there's this perception among a lot of my clients that introverts are shy, and you and I both know that's not really the definition of an introvert, but that introverts don't enjoy interacting with people, they don't get out there and speak. There are just a lot of things that, quote-unquote, successful business builders do that are incompatible with being an introvert. So, again, it's this perception and it's this mental box that I find a lot of my clients seem to jump into called, well, I'm an introvert, therefore I'm just not going to be successful doing that, whatever that is. And it goes into almost a perceived conflict between who I am versus what, again, these almost stereotypical successful business builders do and do naturally that helps them to get clients. That's definitely the biggest challenge that I see.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you. I think you even said, quote, unquote, successful. I can't remember if you used that exact phrase, but that's one thing I find with a lot of my clients is that they are basing their definition of success, they're putting it through the filter of other people's definition of success. It sounds like what you are encountering is that there's a need to recognize that an introvert's success is going to either, you know, the how and the what it looks like is going to be different than maybe what's represented around them.
Absolutely, yeah. One of the things that I teach is that we all have the ability to succeed in business. And the way that we do that, and as you're saying, what success looks like and how it comes to be, is going to differ from person to person. But there's this image of what success is because that's what the world seems to say, or at least what we think the world is saying. And yeah, it's possible to get really tied up in that and to shoot ourselves in the foot in some ways because of that.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of sabotage and self-sabotage that can happen if we aren't reflective and discerning about our own definition of success.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad you brought that up. And, you know, I referenced that workshop that I attended before that you mm-hmm. gave here in Seattle. And one of the big aha moments I had during that workshop came when you were talking about sort of two cycles of business development. And I hope you'll enlighten us because I can't remember exactly what they were called, but I remember one had this, the key difference was one was sort of a cycle of thrashing and, mm-hmm. well, if I just keep doing more, bigger, faster of the same thing, I will start to get more results. And then there was another cycle that was much healthier and more positive.
Yes. Yes.
And so I'm wondering, can you elaborate on that, you know, and share what those cycles look like and how can we recognize which one we're in?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad to hear, Beth, that was an aha moment for you because I love these cycles. I really do. The first one is what I call the cycle of failure. And that's where somebody wakes up or they're looking at the bills sitting on their desk, whatever the moment may be, and they say, I need clients. I need clients now. And they run out. And like you said, it's thrashing. They start doing all of the activities that they've ever heard of that might lead to getting clients. So they'll run out and maybe they'll start speaking and they'll go to just all of the networking events that they can possibly cram in their schedule. And it feels really frantic because they're trying to do all of this different stuff all at once. And then what happens is absolutely nothing. They don't get clients. What follows that is this crisis of confidence. And the self-talk that goes with that tends to be something like, oh, yeah, okay, I knew it. I did all this stuff that everybody else does that gets clients for them. It didn't work for me. I knew it. I can't get clients. The next step is, okay, I can't do it. I give up. I quit. I'm just not even going to try anymore. But the problem is, of course, you still need the clients. This is just a downward spiral because you still need the clients. You go back to the frantic activity having learned nothing. And it just goes spiraling around, and it's worse each time. It's faster each time, and it's worse each time. So that's what I call the cycle of failure. The cycle of success starts off the same way. It can be the same panic of, I need clients. But the key difference is that rather than jumping straight into activity, there's this moment of reflection where you create a plan that will build on your own strengths and your own interests, and a plan that's calculated to reach the right group of people. So you create a plan that lets you know what you're going to do and with whom or toward whom you're going to do it. you execute that plan, you start building credibility. So you're building external indications that you actually know what you're doing. You build relationships. You start asking some of those people for the business. You get the business. And then over time, as you go through this cycle, you refine it. So if a part of your plan paid off very well, then, of course, you do more of that. And then conversely, if it didn't pay off so well, you do less of it. So it gets better each time. You asked how you can recognize which cycle you're in. And the easiest to recognize is the cycle of failure, because it's characterized by lots of action without a clear plan. And I like to use the analogy of swimming. So it's kind of like you're thrown into a pool. You don't know how to swim. And in all of this thrashing around, you might actually do a stroke, a real stroke. So you might do one stroke of the crawl, and then you might do one side stroke and one back stroke. But when you do it like that, just one by one, without any kind of cohesive plan, it's a lot like drowning because there's no consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no consistency, there's no forward movement. You thrash a lot, and then you go under. So if you feel like you're thrashing, and here's the test that I give people sometimes. If you don't have a reasonably good idea of what business development activity you're going to be doing 3 months from now, and certainly if you don't know specifically what you're going to be doing for business development next week, then you're probably in the failure spiral.
Yeah, that's a great way of framing that question, because I think when we're in that thrashing place, it's all now. It's all...
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about the benefit of being in the moment, being
yes.
now and being fully present. And when that's happening at the same time as the thrashing, then I can see how that could definitely be a cycle of failure. There's no forward vision that's happening as well.
Exactly, yeah. And without forward vision, it's like operating in the dark. Maybe you're moving forward, and maybe you're about to collide with the wall.
And what I appreciate about that question, you know, what's your business development activity going to look like 3 months from now, is what I recognized in that thrashing place was that, like you said, you might occasionally swim a stroke, and you're staying above water just enough, and what I think of it, you know, you're getting just enough business that you think, okay, if I just do more of this same thing, then it'll keep coming. But what happens is, you might get a little bit more, but it's not sustainable, and it continues to be at a lower level than what would be possible if you were being intentional. That's what I noticed for me. It's like you feel like you're getting thrown a bone every once in a while, and you think, okay, a little bit longer, be patient, more of the same,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
all you're doing is thrashing more.
Exactly. I'm glad you said that, Beth, because when you're in that place and you are getting just a little bit of business or some kind of results, you can feel like you're on the cusp of a breakthrough. But if you're
right.
in this cycle of failure, you're actually on the cusp of a breakdown and you don't even see it.
Well, if we're stuck in that place,
mm-hmm.
because it can be also a seductive place because you're busy. You're always doing something, you know. You're caught
mm-hmm.
up in the busyness of business. How can, you know, once we recognize, okay, this is where I'm at and I'm stuck, how can we shift to being in that healthier cycle or pattern of business development behavior?
Well, there's three things I think that you can do, and two of them are actually really similar. The first one, and I think you need to notice what it is that's holding you back, what is keeping you stuck. Sometimes it's that you really don't know what to do. Sometimes it is that you know what to do, but for some reason you're afraid to do it. I think we're all in that place at some points. It may be that you feel like it just simply won't work. There are not enough clients out there. So it's important to be clear on what it is that's stopping you. Even more than that, there are some things that you can do that will get you moving. And the first one that I want to suggest is a calendar. know what to do, and I'm assuming here that you do know what to do. Know what it is. So let's say that you know that you need to meet with a particular person. Go ahead, put it on the calendar, make that your commitment to yourself. And having it on the calendar puts it in a time, puts it in ink. And so it gets it out of this, oh, yeah, when things slow down, I will fill in the blank. Because as you say, if you're in this cycle, you're very, very busy, so things never will slow down. So use the calendar, create a time when you are going to do the thing that you know you need to do. The second thing that I recommend that's kind of similar because it deals with time, do you know those little digital egg timers? Have you ever seen those?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Those are magic. Because one thing that I have found myself and found with my clients is that if there's something that you don't really enjoy, it seems to grow to mammoth proportions. And let's just imagine, you know, I know that you do a fair amount of writing, right?
Yes.
So if you have an idea and if you know what you're going to write, it's typically a fun, kind of anyway, somewhat easy process. But if you don't know what you're going to write, for me at least, it's really pretty painful, and I will put that off as long as I possibly can. With the egg timer, commit to 45 minutes. So let's say it's writing a blog post or writing an article, or it's reaching out to some people. Maybe you need to make some phone calls, whatever it is. Use that egg timer. Set it for 45 minutes. And know that at the end of 45 minutes, you can stop. You don't have to keep doing this thing, but you're going to do it for 45 minutes. So often what happens is that at the end of 45 minutes, you don't want to stop. So that's another good way to get unstuck. Now, those are both when you know what's going on. And they're effective when you can see it all. It's just a matter of getting the action going so that you do move forward. If you don't know, if you only know that you're stuck and you don't really know what's going on, you don't know the next step, you're that stuck and you see only one perspective. And again, we're all there sometimes. The best thing that you can possibly do is to reach out to somebody who can help you see a different perspective, who's got a bigger view of things, who's got a different view of things, who can help you identify what the next step can be, could be, should be, who can help you distinguish an actual fear or a grounded concern, a concern based on some kind of evidence about something that you're thinking of doing, as opposed to fear that comes from lack of confidence or lack of knowledge about what it is that you might do, or something that comes from a story that you're holding on to that you don't even see is a story. You see it as, all caps, the truth.
Yes.
We've all been there, right?
And we've all been there. Yes. We've all been there. Yeah. And as soon as you start to recognize those stories, it's very empowering because you can, getting that outside perspective is extremely valuable to start that. And then you start to notice them on your own and you say, oh, okay, I'm in a story right now.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some business development activities that you think are most important for the entrepreneur to be very intentional about?
Well, I think that there are really two kinds of business development activities, or two categories, I should say. And almost anything can in some way fall into one of those two categories. So the question really is, what is your intention and what is the result? The two categories are, number one, building your credibility and building your credentials. So I could put up a website today that says, hi, I'm Julie Fleming. If you want to plan the most fabulous wedding ever, hire me and you will just be blown away. Now, I know nothing about planning a wedding. So a business development activity for me, if that were going to be my new business, which it is not, the activity would be doing the kinds of things that would give me some credentials and some credibility. So taking a class on wedding planning, getting whatever the wedding planner consultant credential is, writing articles, doing the research for those articles specifically, but getting the information and the knowledge that will give me the substantive basis to do what it is that I say I'm going to do. That's the credential building part. The credibility building part is sort of the same thing. So obviously having a qualification of some sort is a credential and builds your credibility. But also writing articles, writing blog posts, having a knowledgeable position that is grounded that you can put out there so that other people can learn from you and they can look at what you're doing. Let's say they trip across one of your blog posts. They read it and they say, oh, look, that person really knows what they're doing. So that's one piece because it's important to get clients. It's also critically important that you know what to do with them what you've got once you have got them. And a part of getting the clients is showing that you do know what you're doing. So that's category number one, credential and credibility building. Category number two is relationship building because it's people who are going to hire you. It's people you're going to be working with, even if your client is actually an organization. And it's people who are going to talk about the job that you've done. So relationship building is another kind of business development activity. Now, having said that, I said in the very beginning, it's the intention and the results that determine whether something in one of those two categories is really business development activity or is thrashing. So if you are going to, let's use the wedding planning analogy or example for just a minute more. Let's imagine that I'm going to attend a networking event where all of the other people who are there are 65-year-old men. That's probably not going to help me grow my wedding planning business very effectively because, okay, maybe some of them are getting married, but the number's probably not that high. Maybe some of them are fathers of the bride, but number one, probably number's not that high. And number two, fathers of the bride typically don't hire the wedding planners.
Mm-hmm. They probably try to stay as far away as possible.
Typically, yes. I think that's exactly right. So it's really a question of how well planned your activity is, and that's why the planning is so important. And going back a few minutes in our conversation, in the success cycle, the planning is what tells you, okay, rather than going to this group of 65-year-old men, I'd rather go to a group of professional women who are probably between 25 and 35. Better yet, maybe I'd like to go to a group of women who are meeting with, oh, I don't know, wedding event places, event halls. So it's the planning, it's the activity, certainly, filing your nails, not business development, but it's the intention behind the activity.
Well, thank you for lending that piece of clarity, because it's like a lot of other words we use in business building that can get tossed around, and do we really stop and think about what does that actually mean and mm-hmm. what qualifies as a business development activity? Because then once we know, we can start to be more intentional about it and more strategic instead of us making certain assumptions about what it is and isn't. And so now that we have that grounding, and as maybe a bottom line for our conversation here on this podcast, what are some things that somebody listening can do right now to make sure that their business development efforts are on the right track?
There are really three things that I would suggest, and I think I've already said all three, but they're so important. number one is making the plan. And I think that I probably my clients get tired of hearing me say, make sure you have a plan. But it's the foundational piece, and it's the first thing that you have to do. And it's especially important, by the way, for the people who are working in a business where you're not necessarily going to get clients immediately. Some of us are very fortunate that our businesses are the kind of business where we can run into a potential client, having laid a strategic plan to get there, and have a conversation and get hired on the spot. For instance, some of my lawyer clients who work with pretty legally sophisticated matters that tend to cost a lot of money, they may interact with a potential client and have a conversation with zero probability of getting hired right there on the spot. So it's important to have a plan that allows you to measure the results that you're getting, even when those results are not reflected in immediate new business, but in some sort of interim step toward the business. So make sure you have a plan. That being said, the second thing that you have to do is to get started. And people laugh when I say that sometimes because it's so obvious.
But not so much.
Right. It's one of those things that's obvious and yet really easy not to do, especially when there's so much emphasis on having a plan. People like to make it perfect, and the plan will never be perfect. If the plan is perfect, your business is probably gone because it takes that much time to make something perfect.
Mm-hmm.
When your plan is workable, and by that I mean well-considered. You've given it some thought. You've anticipated obstacles. You've put some time and some energy into it, and it's a really good roadmap for you. When it's at that point, it's time to get moving. And then to get moving consistently. Because if you pick a few business development activities and do them consistently, so, again, going back to the swimming analogy, if you decide that you're going to swim the crawl and the side stroke, and you do those two consistently, again, you're going to get a lot further than if you do one stroke of the crawl and then one backstroke and then one side stroke and so on. Mm-hmm. And then the final point that I would give people is to make sure that you're building relationships. Especially people in some professions, and lawyers are among those professions, find it easy to get caught in this credentialing credibility building place because it's simple to do. It's not always easy. Mm-hmm. But it's very simple because you know what to do. There's typically a fairly clear roadmap to getting the credential, publishing the article, whatever it may be. And people can get caught in that and have this long string of credentials but no relationships. And as I said, it's people who are going to hire you and people who work with you. And so without relationships, you're not going to get very far. So make sure that you're building relationships on a regular basis.
And I think that advice is particularly apropos to introverts, because we can get into that knowledge building place, and it's comfortable and it's satisfying, and we see progress and we know what to do. And then it's that, like we were talking about before, with stretching out and stepping out and getting ourselves out the door, and that's how we build those relationships in a meaningful way.
And actually, if I can add one thing, it is getting out the door, but these days it can even be staying in your office behind your computer but building relationships via Facebook and as we reconnected, right?
Right, exactly, exactly. So, yeah, taking advantage of the off and online advantages that we have these days.
Yeah.
Thank you for mentioning that, because that is another thing that introverts, in particular, I think that the internet has been, you know, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread for introverts.
Yes, I agree.
It's just opened up, and now I'm starting to see information that's about, well, somebody is extroverted online and introverted in person, and it's fascinating how it brings out different aspects of people's personalities and how, while it can be a very vulnerable medium, we also are often very quick to share things that we would never share if we were looking somebody in the eye.
Absolutely.
So it's rather fascinating.
Sometimes to our detriment.
Sometimes to our detriment, exactly. So there's something to be said about, you know, being very, as far as that goes, as a business activity and business development activities, being very intentional and consistent, strategic about how we show up online as well as off. Well, Julie, I've got a question for you that I ask of all of my guests at the end of podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, if you were granted a year's vacation on Introvert Island, and it's probably very sunny and nice and, you know, perfect 75 degrees there, all expenses were paid, but you only had room in your suitcase for 3 books for that year.
Mm-hmm.
What 3 would you take? What would you take with you and why?
Well, first I have to say I'd get a bigger suitcase or I'd throw out some of the clothes.
Oh. But I see. So there's the lawyer loophole coming in there. I didn't specify the size of the suitcase. So.
Exactly. Training always out. But if it's only 3, I think the first one that I would bring is a book called The Quotable Lewis. And that's a book of excerpts from C.S. Lewis's writings. And it's arranged by subject. So it talks about grief, it talks about faith, it talks about people, particular people. And it's basically a greatest hits collection from books like The Chronicles of Narnia, Mere Christianity, A Grief Observed, just all of these books that are so meaningful to me. But it's a little bit from each of them, as well as from some of his letters. So that would have to go in there because I could just spend, I can't even imagine how long. I could probably spend the whole year just picking this up, reading an excerpt, and then going off and sitting in that beautiful sun and thinking about it or writing about it. Mm-hmm. The number 2 book would be A Million Miles in 1,000 Years by Donald Miller. This is a fascinating book. I read it for the first time this summer. I will be rereading it. And Don Miller wrote a memoir, and some filmmakers picked it up and wanted to make a movie of his life. But when they came and sat down with him, they concluded that his life was not interesting enough or purposeful enough for a movie, and they would need to spice it up. And so the book talks about this whole process and uses script writing principles to talk about how to build a meaningful and purposeful life. It's funny, it's insightful, and actually, I usually skip the author's notes because they're typically short and boring.
Mm-hmm.
When I opened this book, the very first page was the author's note. It was not even a full page long, and it grabbed me and would not let go. So, yeah, that book would have to go with me. And then the third book would be one called Broken Open, How Difficult Times Can Help Us Grow. And that one is by Elizabeth Lesser. And I love this book because we all have difficult times, and this book talks about the phoenix process, rising from the ashes. And it shows so clearly that we all have choices in every moment, and no matter how difficult a situation may be, we can choose. Are we going to just be broken? Or are we going to be, as the title says, broken open? The other thing that I love about this book, Lesser is a great storyteller, and each chapter starts out with a snippet of some kind of poetry or a couple of paragraphs from some literature. And it's just one of those books that is so incredibly nourishing. I've already read it 3 or 4 times now. And I find something new in it every single time. So that one would have to go with me also.
Well, thanks for sharing those. And so, you know, you've been very generous with your knowledge, but I know that you have a lot more to share with people. And so if someone wants to learn more, how can they reach you and learn more about you and your products and your services?
Well, the best way to find out about me, I guess, is at juliefleming.org. And I have a blog there that has lots of articles, and I offer free audio there as well. If any lawyers happen to be listening, I have a website directed specifically for them at lifeatthebar.com. People are always disappointed that it's, like, not cocktails.
Exactly. It's the other kind of bar.
Exactly,
or it could be the ballet bar, but not the same spelling.
Yeah, people somehow in my world tend to go straight for the alcohol. I don't know what that says.
What's that about? Oh, that's funny. So lifeatthebar.com.
.com, yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. And do you have a presence on Facebook and Twitter for your business?
Well, not for my business. I've actually decided to go the authentic leadership model, and I am who I am. So I welcome connections on Facebook. I'm Julie A. Fleming on Facebook. And then on Twitter, it's just Julie Fleming.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Like I said, you shared some. You were very generous with your knowledge and sharing, and I think you've offered some really great things for people to reflect on about their own business and what cycle they're in. Are they thrashing or are they on the road to success? And I really appreciate talking with you again and being able to share your wisdom with my listeners. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Beth. I really enjoyed it. It's been a lot of fun talking with you today.
This is Beth Below, the Introvert Entrepreneur. A very special thank you to Julie Fleming for joining me today, and thank you for spending this valuable time with us. I hope you'll join me each week for insights, information, and inspiration for introverts who know that success is an inside job. If you'd like to learn more, please visit theintrovertentrepreneur.com. You can also find me and a growing community of introverts on Facebook at facebook.com/theintrovertentrepreneur. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.